Humor is a beautiful thing in a lot of ways. It's one of the places where we can still say things that maybe we're not allowed to say anywhere else. There's nothing like the feeling of being in a great comedy club and hearing a comedian say something like, oh my God, did she really say that? Did he really say that? That's really funny. Well, that is not the kind of humor that works in the workplace. Welcome, I'm your host Dino Cattaneo and you're listening to Authentic Leadership for Everyday People, the podcast where we investigate the connection between effective leadership and authenticity. If you're looking for inspiration and tips on how to become a better leader by being your true self, you're in the right place. Last week, we talked about the social purpose of the firm with Deborah Spar from Harvard Business School. Today, we're on a slightly different plan. See, this episode is coming out on April Fool's Day. And for a moment, I considered creating an elaborated spoof to honor the day. I decided to pass on this option for a number of reasons, but the idea of fun and humor still intrigued me. So, the focus of today's episode is the use of humor in leadership. We will start with some considerations on how to think about humor within a leadership context, and then I will share an excerpt from an old episode about how improv comedy can improve your leadership skills. I hope you enjoy it. Let me start with a short digression on April Fools. There's a rich tradition of corporate April Fools, and I'm sure that by the time you're listening to this episode, you will have become aware of some great, very funny corporate April Fool or some funny campaign. The episode that inspired me to do an April Fool in podcast format is actually an episode of the show Disgraceland, which is a true crime from musicians show that's fabulous. And in 2019, they released an episode called Zodiac Killer, Qu'est-ce que c'est? And basically, it was a whole episode that created, in their traditional format, a story that sort of revealed that Jim Morrison, singer of The Doors, was in reality the Zodiac Killer. It was so fun to listen to that show that I always thought, oh, at some point, I wish I were able to do something like this. And the fact that I have not yet come up with something at that standard is the main reason why you're not getting a spoofed episode. I also want to share my personal history of April Fools. A little funny thing. In Italy, April Fools is called Pesce d'Aprile, which means April's fish. And my favorite prank is one year, and I was a teenager at the time, I told a friend of mine that a band that we both really loved was going to play a secret show that only a few people know about that night. And I gave him the address of the Milano Aquarium as the place to go to. I got an amazing response from him. He really loved it, found it hysterical. And then every year he would come like, who are we selling to? Via Gaudio 2, which is the address of the aquarium in Milan. So this is my little April Fool digression. Now let's get into the meat of the episode. One of my core beliefs that informs both the philosophy of how these podcasts came about and my coaching practice is that if you're true to yourself, you have better performance. And being true to yourself, I always say it's taking the time to clearly articulate your values and your desires and then make decisions based on that. At the beginning of every coaching engagement, I have an exercise with my clients where I go through a value articulation process. And for each value, I have them give a name to the value and then describe it. And one of my core values, personal values that inform my work, is a value that I actually call humor. The way that I articulate it is take your work and what you do seriously, but do not take yourself seriously because of what you do and the work that you do. That informs the way that I relate to people and the way that I work with people. As a result of this, I have a very firm belief that humor is a key component of leadership and that when deployed effectively, humor is a great way to rally your team, to go through difficult situations, and to overall perform in a better way. I want to start this conversation with some key principles on how to make humor work. The most important thing, the one that was almost the umbrella under which all of this principle that you're going to hear sits, is this. Remember the goal. You're using humor as a tool to create better dynamics and better performance within your team. Or said a different way, the humor is not the goal. You are not using humor to be the star of the moment. You're not using humor to make people like you more, even though probably they will like you more. And you're not running a comedy club. At the risk of being redundant, if it hasn't been made abundantly clear from what I've said before, think about the context of servant leadership. A servant leader is there to serve their team, not the other way around. The same way within the context of humor, you are there to serve the humor and your team through humor. You're not using humor to serve you with your team. This seems like a basic idea, but you would be surprised. There are definitely examples of excessive use of humor. So there is such a thing as too much humor in the corporate workplace. Starting with the point of view that humor is a tool and a mean and not the goal, there's a number of underlying themes that you can think about as you think about when and how to use humor. I've made a list of six themes or principles. So here they are. The first one is be yourself or be authentic. Don't force it. The second one is know your team. The third one is know the time. The fourth one is listen to the room. The fifth is lead by example. And the sixth is remember the context. Keep it professional. Let's start with the first one. Not surprisingly, given the title of the show, it is be authentic, be yourself. You may be somebody who is very serious by nature, or you may not be comfortable being funny, or it's just not in your bailiwick. That's okay. Do not change your personality and do not try to be the funny one. There are many ways to use humor to enhance the team dynamics. And the most important part is create an open environment where people can be comfortable using humor and allow people to use it within the right context. Create a space where people, especially if you're very serious, creating a space where people are comfortable being funny within a professional context can be a really powerful way of connecting and creating and building trust with your team. Which leads me to the second really important principle, know your team. Understand who are the people in your team. Understand what their general cultural, what their social environment is, what their personal beliefs may be, and then understand what are the boundaries that you need to operate in, and making sure that not only in your use of humor, but in the use of humor by your overall team, people do not feel demeaned or undervalued or undermined or made fun of. You know, and this applies whether you're leading a team of 5 or 10 people or whether you're the CEO of a large company leading thousands and thousands of people. It's really important to understand the overall context and how it will be received by the team. Just as important as knowing your team is knowing the right time. There's a time and place for humor. There are situations where humor may not be appropriate because they're very serious, because they may have impact, or just because the group that you're with is too broad. But at the same time, this may be counterintuitive, but it also relates to the understanding, the timing of when humor can be used. In smaller situations, smaller team situation, humor could actually also be used to diffuse a tense situation. A right place joke at the right time in a small group, in a difficult context, may actually move the group ahead. Now, if you look at great comedians, one of the things that you will realize is that they're always fully aware of the room. So the next principle is listen to the room. Pay attention to what's going on around you. Be very aware of it. When is it time to stop? When is it time to no longer be funny? And then at the same time, see how are your jokes landing? Are people maybe getting offended? And then a corollary to that is because you may not be aware of that in the context, make sure that you collect feedback from the people around you. You know, make sure that people are comfortable coming and letting you know if you've crossed the line, and then go and apologize to the people that you've crossed the line to. Next step, not a shocker, lead by example. So we talked a little about earlier when we were saying in the context of being authentic, you don't need to be the funny one to create an environment where humor can be used to foster a more productive environment. Make sure that people feel safe. Make sure that there's an open and transparent culture where people are comfortable making a joke at the right place at the right time without obviously crossing boundaries, so that everybody can feel that that is a resource that they have at their disposal to diffuse difficult situation, to make work more fun, and to be more productive. Another side of leading by example is actually using humor within your context when you're making presentation, using humor to support key messages. Obviously, the humor needs to be within the right context, but it can be a very effective way to communicate. There are plenty of companies that even make it on a corporate level the use of humor in their messaging, in the way they talk, a way to reinforce the key principles that they operate with. And then obviously, as a final point of the leading by example, don't make fun of ladders, but make fun of yourself and let people know that it's okay to make fun of you. Now, there's a delicate balance that you will need to strike on this, making sure that it doesn't go to the excess where the making fun of you or the self-deprecation that goes into making fun of yourself doesn't undermine your authority, but creating a place where people can feel comfortable, make a joke or two about their boss, it's a good place. This leads us to the final point. Last but definitely not least, remember the context, keep it professional. I may be repeating myself, but this is never repeated enough. Within a corporate environment, there is such a thing as too much humor. Yes, humor is a great way to connect with your team. It's a great way to have your team connecting to each other, but it is really important to keep it balanced with professionalism to make sure that even if you're using humor in a professional environment, you remember that you're there to accomplish goals. You're there to advance whatever it is you're advancing. Second, humor is a beautiful thing in a lot of ways. It's one of the places where we can still say things that maybe we're not allowed to say anywhere else. There's nothing like the feeling of being in a great comedy club and hearing a comedian say something like, oh my God, did she really say that? Did he really say that? That's really funny. Well, that is not the kind of humor that works in the workplace. Make sure that your humor is appropriate. A couple of things. Use humor, not sarcasm. Try to be positive. Keep light. Stick to situations that relate to the day-to-day work life. And make sure that we talked about this when we were talking about knowing your team. Make sure that you're inclusive. Make sure that the jokes that you're making can be understood by everybody in the room. And then that they do not offend the sensibilities of people that may have a different view of the world. And also, this should go without saying, stay away from gender, race, religion, all this type of things. And don't be afraid to go and check in with HR if you feel that at some point you may have crossed a boundary, to figure out what are the appropriate steps to take. With this, we conclude the little analysis of the six main ideas or principles to apply when you're using humor. Before I do a quick recap, I want to bring up an example that you will be familiar with for sure if you've been in business school in the 90s and early 2000s and maybe later on. When I think of the idea of effective humor used in the corporate environment, I think of Southwest Airlines. Southwest Airlines in the 80s and early 90s was famous for its culture of fun. You sometimes would get on the plane in the early days and the CEO would jump out of an overhead bin. But at the same time, it had a really, really rigorous operational culture where every decision had been made with the goal of reducing the cost to fly people. And it is that balance of a very, very serious operational culture with the spirit that the CEO brought to the airline at the time. Now, I don't know whether the sense of humor that was applied in the 80s and early 90s at Southwest Airlines would be appropriate today, but it was this infectious fun from the top down that created a really successful and really productive culture. With that, let me quickly recap the six principles that we talked about to be using humor effectively in a corporate environment. The first one, be yourself, be authentic. Don't force humor in a way that is not natural to you. The second one, know your team, know who's in the room, and be appropriate with them. The third one, know the time when you're going to use humor. Use it at the right moment for the right goal and be very mindful of not using it in a place when it would not be a good moment. Fourth one, listen to the room. Pay attention to what's going on in the moment when you are using humor, but also make sure that you collect feedback afterwards. Fifth, lead by example. Encourage a culture that is humorous and don't be afraid to have people make fun of you. And then final, and almost obvious, and maybe something that encompasses everything, remember the context and keep it professional. there is such a thing as too much humor, and then also make sure that your jokes are appropriate. With that, we finished the little discussion on how to apply humor in the workplace. I also wanted to bring one more thing, and you may remember an episode that we did a couple of years ago with Bill Principale, the entrepreneur. There's a specific discipline of humor or comedy that actually develops great team leadership and team participation skills, and that's improvisational comedy. I'm going to leave you with a little extract from my conversation with Bill that talks about how improv comedy improves leadership skills. We will pick up from the moment when I asked him the question. So here we go. I was thinking about the conversation we were having earlier around improvisation. What do you think are some of the key skills and principles from improvisation and improvisational comedy that translate to leadership and to business?
I was so surprised, Dino, how many translate. First of all, how many? Well, when I first built the website for the improvisation, I said, okay, there are at least a half a dozen benefits here. Wow, I came up with at least 20, over 20 benefits. And the principles, I mean, I was just blown away at how many wonderful principles there are, how many benefits there are, and how it can apply to business and everywhere in life. I think it's the best kept secret. I mean, it's unbelievable. But to sort of simplify it, let's say you and I are on stage all by ourselves, right? And let's say you come out on stage first, which means you have an idea. So now I come and join you because that's the rule. As soon as somebody has an idea, they come out on stage, you can't leave them out there alone, right? They were brave enough to make this initiation. Somebody pops out there. So if you pop out first and then I come out to support you, all right? So here I am. There's an audience ready and listening. I'm sort of excited and nervous, as probably you are, because I have no idea what your idea is. Right? I have no idea what you're going to say, what you're going to do. So the first step is I got to listen and listen deeply. I mean, not just your words, but your body language, your sentiment under the words, as I call it, your emotion. What is Dino coming with here? Right? And so that's the first big step. Listen deeply, the sentiment under the words. And if you have a sentiment under your words, let's say that's anger, for example, the audience feels that. They see that. If I don't address that, they're going to say, hey, time out. What's going on? You know, you're talking about something different. They're going to be very unsatisfied, consciously or unconsciously. Okay, so that's the first step. Second step is I have to actually feel what my reaction is to you. So I call that self-assessment. So if you say something and it makes me like surprised and shocked, I'm going to have some body language that's surprised and shocked. Now, if I don't say something that correlates to that, again, the audience is going to say, hey, wait a minute, there's a disconnect. You know, you are shocked and you're not saying anything like that. You're not addressing it. So step two is I have to assess my feelings. If I'm angry at you, if I'm surprised at you or whatever, and then I have to incorporate that into an authentic response. Hey, Dino, I'm surprised to hear you say that. Da, 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 da. So that's what I call the conscious communication cycle, which is critical in improv. So deep listening, and then assess my feelings, and then somehow incorporate that into an authentic response back to you. And then you do the same thing. And now we have a real connection. We have a real communication. And the audience is intrigued because they see that our feelings are matching our words and that this is real. So that's sort of the basis that I talk about in improv.
Yeah, and when you think about the applicability of that, even into like really simple things, right? It's interesting. When you said anger, the first business situation that came to mind to me would have been like a performance review. Hey, Dino, you're not doing that great. Now you have to listen. Now, first I have to listen
yes,
to why I'm not doing that great. And then you have to assess my response and respect my response and not fight my response, right? Because I think the three most powerful things that I find in improv is the idea of listening with an open mind, the idea of yes and, so the not just flat out denying whatever the other person is bringing at the table, even if it's crazy, finding the one point of commonality and adding to it. And then I think the most important thing, which is what you talk about, when somebody steps on stage and the other person steps along, there's an understanding that these two people are there to support each other.
Yes, totally. I mean, the other benefits you talked about, which is great, yes and total support. We're there to totally support each other. Improv is not about you. It's about making your partner great. It's about supporting your partner. You never want to tell a joke or do a bit because the whole thing goes down the drain. So supporting each other is a wonderful improvisational benefit that applies to business. The other one is yes and. I mean, I love talking about that one because how often is no a default position? You know, an employee goes to the boss, hey, have a great day. No, I'm busy. I mean, no is so frequently used. And what does it do? It shuts down the person who's got an idea, all right? And it tells them, you're not important. You're dismissive. I don't have time for you. So I have exercises in the book for managers to say, find a way to say yes, no matter how small a yes it is. You know, hey, thanks for the idea. I'm in the middle of something. Can we talk about this later? Okay, that's a positive response. Even if they know it's not a good idea, even if they know it's not a good day, when they come back and say, okay, let's take some time and discuss your idea. Ask them questions about the idea. I mean, you want to train them to show them it's not a good idea. That's your job as a manager. So ask them questions. Why did you think about that? What did you do? And asking them questions might do a couple of things. Number one, it might change your mind that there is something good about that idea. It might not be the original idea, but maybe an offshoot of that. Or it might help the person who had the idea, you know, modify the idea, and you get brainstorming together. So you find the piece, as you said, that is positive, that you can say yes to, and let's explore that. Let's open it up. Let's see what's there. And so you have a 10-minute conversation with the employee, or whatever it is, and you see if there's something of value there. And if it isn't, you both come to that conclusion together because you discussed it all, you opened it all up, there was nothing left, and we say, okay, well, hey, great try. You know, let's just keep chugging at it.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, find a friend who may like it and tell them that they should listen to it. Also, you may have listened to every single episode so far, so in that case, I'm really thankful. But most likely you haven't, so go find a few others and listen to them. For example, if you haven't listened to Bill's episode, he has a fascinating story where he talks about how he used mindfulness concepts to build his career as a tech entrepreneur since the late 70s and early 80s. It's episode number 40. As usual, if you really like the show, tell your friends and post about it on social media. Every little bit helps. Make sure you subscribe to the show on your favorite listening platform so you don't miss any episode. And if you listen on a platform that allows rating and reviews like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, Good Pods, please leave us a stellar rating and a review. 5 stars. Stay tuned because after the credits, I will play a song by Susan Cattaneo, one of Boston's best Americana singer-songwriters. For more information on the episode and all the links, go to the website, al4ep.com, spelled with the number 4. You can email me at dino@al4ep.com. Please follow the podcast on whatever social platform you're on. On Twitter and Instagram, the handle is @al4edp with the letter D. And on Facebook, look for Authentic Leadership for Everyday People. This episode was produced by me, Dino Cattaneo. The theme music was composed, produced, and arranged by Nicolas Cattaneo, who also played keyboards and drums, with Tony Savarino on guitar and Jesse Williams on bass. And now, here is a song by Susan Cattaneo. Since the topic of today's episode was humor, I'm going to keep it very lighthearted and share with you an old cut, somewhat silly song called On Again, Off Again. Enjoy. Hope we don't get burned.
You got that?